Welcome, and thank you for listening to our Wealth Management Forum Q&A session. We are in September of 2022. We just recently had our Wealth Management Forum, and now it's time to answer some of the questions that we received from our attendees. My name is Patrick Kincaid. I'm the Director of Marketing at Stonebridge here. With me today is attorney Sophia Grotkin. Hello, Sophia.
Hello. Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. We also have CPA Steve Wormley.
Hello, Steve. Patrick.
How are you?
Good.
Good. And with us as well is Portfolio Manager Robert Kincaid.
Hi.
Hello.
Thanks for having me here.
Good. I'm glad you're here. All right. So let's just go ahead and get started. We have quite a few questions that we want to try and cover today. We'll get through as much as we can. We'll try and give as much detail as we can, but just know as a listener, if you do have further questions or you feel like maybe it wasn't answered the way that really kind of connects with you, you are always welcome to call us and we'll make sure we get you in front of the right person to answer these questions in more detail. So let's start with this. At what age or point in an individual's life does it make sense for them to open a disclaimer trust? Sophia, I thought this would be a good one for you.
Yep, I can take this one away. Well, the obvious answer is once you've determined through your tax planning or financial planning that you and your spouse may incur some estate tax, either from a federal or state standpoint. But more practically speaking, I would say it's when you're preparing your estate planning with a spouse. One thing with a disclaimer trust is that it's optional to utilize that resource at the time of the first spouse's death, and you have time to determine whether or not a disclaimer trust would be beneficial or necessary to reduce estate tax. It's nine months from the time of death currently. Of course, that time frame may change over time. In practice, I don't think that it hurts to have that option available, and it's something that there's no real hard and fast age or threshold to be able to utilize it.
So another question for you, Sophia, how should changes to a will or trust be communicated to family members?
Good question. And the answer to that question differs based on what your family structure is really like. But over time, I've felt that the best process is often and early. And what I mean by that is it's important for your family members to at least know that you have an estate plan in place. And it's important for them to know that early on and for that to be repeated over and over. The scope as to whether or not how much of your estate plan you share with your family is really a conversation that's worth having often with your professionals to determine, you know, what is important and critical information for beneficiaries and professionals to be coaching on throughout your lifetime versus what is private information that, you know, you'd like to keep, you know, personal to you until it's time to begin a transfer of wealth. And so at the very least, what I typically will discuss with clients is, you know, at least establishing and informing your fiduciaries that you've selected that, you know, that is a role that you've elected them to take on so that they can prepare for that role over time. And then secondly, informing as of what's the most up-to-date documents that you've had. So this is, you know, I do have an updated trust. This is the date of execution so that everybody is clear as to that you have updated documents and it avoids a lot of discord that could potentially otherwise ensue.
Bob, this one's for you. What are some examples of specific circumstances where an individual should create an annuity trust over an IRA and vice versa?
That is a good question. And I don't know that I could probably address this as completely perhaps as Steve could, particularly when you're looking at tax situations. An annuity trust is an insurance product that is often used to either defer taxes or minimize taxes, and can serve well for those who are trying to establish an IRA. You get some of the same advantages when you establish an IRA account with whoever you may be working with. If it's an IRA, it's a retirement plan. It's a qualified plan, which means it is also deferring the income to some degree that you're placing into it up to the allowable tax limits. And then the earnings on that, both the annuity and the IRA account, accumulate tax-free until such time as they're distributed, typically after the age of 59 and a half or 72 and a half. So those options are both viable options. It really just depends on what the particular investor favors. Steve, I don't know if you want to add anything to that from a tax standpoint.
I guess I would say that the annuity trust, which is an individual, a qualified individual annuity trust, I assume you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And in that, it's really an investment choice. It's more less of a tax issue because they're taxed very much like a traditional IRA, but they are have different limitations and rules on what they can be invested into.
Bob, I have another one for you here. Is a 529 plan strictly for educational purposes? Also, are there other plans besides 529s that are available for higher education?
Well, 529 plan is primarily focused on education. Now, that may not be formal college education, as many people think of it, or for that matter, even private school education for K through 12. But yes, it is primarily for education, but it could be for training, potentially, for a specific job. That, which I think we discussed during the video, that yes, this 529 plan typically is intended for a person, but if that person does not use those funds, it can be transferred to another person for the purposes of education. Now, there are other alternatives for saving for education or training that are structured a little bit differently than a 529 plan and may not have some of the tax benefits of a 529 plan. We've seen investors put uniform gift to minor act trusts together for their children that they have access to typically at the age of 18 and use that as their vehicle for funding education, but also other alternatives that they may want to consider at that point in their life, which may be home, could be something else. But when they hit that age of 18, and correct me if I'm wrong, at that point it becomes the child's money and they do with it as they wish. So that's another alternative. Lots of other alternatives for savings. It'd be hard to cover the gamut of that. But a lot of that conversation is around what's appropriate for that particular child, what's appropriate from a tax standpoint, and how does this work relative to any gifting strategy that you have for your family. So, and we'd be happy to answer those questions if you want to call about it.
Excellent. Steve, this one's for you. As a business owner, is there a benefit to hiring your children and listing them as employees?
Owners hiring their children for legitimate documented purposes at work is a great idea. The business owner can pay them a fair rate of pay that might be higher than what the child might otherwise earn in the open market, though it has to be a reasonable pay. It doesn't have to be the smallest pay that the business owner might otherwise pay either. And the excess of that pay, the children can be encouraged to reinvest that money. It can be a good way to communicate with the children that this is a partial way to perhaps fund education or future home purchases or whatever. And they could use tools like Roth IRAs in their own name. They could use other investment tools. The advantage is the business takes a deduction at likely high tax rates, and the children receive the income and pay little or no tax on that income. Social Security and Medicare taxes do apply unless they're paid to children under the age of 18, and then only by sole proprietorship business. People have heard often that it's children's pay is not subject to Social Security and Medicare tax, but it's really only available to a sole proprietor business owner. And we see sole proprietor business owners rarely anymore with the protections of LLCs and S-Corps and such like that.
I have another one here for you, Steve. When should I establish an IRA for my children, and what type?
Well, contributions to traditional IRAs are deductible. Contributions to Roth IRAs are not. Distributions, on the other hand, from traditional IRAs are always 100% taxable at ordinary tax rates. Distributions from Roth IRAs may be tax-free if you follow the qualified rules. As the children are likely to have taxable income that is low, a Roth IRA is a much more favorable than a tool than a traditional IRA. The children really don't need the deduction at this point. And income in a Roth is not taxable if they refrain from withdrawing that until age 59 and a half. What's more, unlike a traditional IRA, if they absolutely need to, they can withdraw the principal, that is the amount they originally invested into the Roth IRAs, at any time without a penalty or a tax. So think about college costs or first-time home purchases. While you don't want to take money out of your Roth IRA or the children's Roth IRA, if you had to, it's available, and again, without penalty or tax. The children are eligible to contribute up to the lesser of $6,000 per year or their earned income. So not every child can contribute. They have to have earned income, which is typically W-2 income or self-employment income. Like any investment strategy, Roth IRAs for anyone are most powerful if you get started early as you can. They're a great retirement tool if they're left to grow, but again, the principal is accessible without penalty or tax if the owner absolutely needs to withdraw it.
Thank you, Steve. Bob, here's a question for you. What are the advantages of a Roth conversion, and who is the strategy best suited for?
That's a question we're faced with fairly often, and we do this in conjunction with their tax preparer, because they know the situation much better than we do. A Roth conversion essentially is to take a distribution perhaps from your 401k plan or your IRA and fund your Roth with those monies. When you do that, you pay tax on the amount that's going into that Roth, and you cannot pay that tax from the money you've taken out from your IRA, so you have to reach into another basket of cash to make that tax payment. And I got a look from Steve there, so I better make sure I'm right about that. But it's an interesting situation. We've seen a lot of clients do that. I'm not exactly sure why. Many do it because they believe when they get to the point of taking money out of their IRA, either at age 59 and a half or 72, when they start depending upon it for retirement income, their belief is that taxes are going to be higher in the future than they are now. That's an assumption that a lot of people make that may not be absolutely accurate. And they're also not taking into consideration the fact that since they're retired, they may not have that high an income level at that time anyway. And so when they do a Roth conversion, they really need to take into consideration that tax that they're paying on the distribution from their IRA or their 401k to put into that Roth at a time when their income levels may be fairly high. And so the tax on that money could be fairly significant. I think it's a strategy that probably works better for younger people. Making that conversion nearer at your retirement age may not make that much sense. So I'll pass part of this question over to Steve. Anything that I've missed there that people need to be aware of?
Yes, Bob. I'm actually a big fan of the Roth conversion strategies in the right timing. You're right. You have to coordinate their tax situation. But sometimes we see opportunities at any time during a person's life where they have a year when they have low income. They might have a net operating loss from their pass-through business that has created a big loss, or they might have gone in between jobs for a period. Those are great opportunities to look for where you can take money that's going to be taxable someday in an IRA or a 401k and get that money out and pay the least tax possible. It is really, as you said, the strategy to find a time when you can do this conversion, pay the tax, when you really believe that your taxes are going to be at a lower rate now than what they might be in the future. One thing people forget, they do think that in retirement, their tax rates are likely to be lower, but sometimes they're not, because you might have a joint filing family that suddenly one spouse dies and the surviving spouse is now taxed at single rates, which are go to higher brackets much quicker than joint rates. Another thing to consider, if the taxpayer, if the family is going to be in a taxable estate situation, which again in Minnesota is $3 million and federal is $24 million, but especially powerful if they are in a higher, say, federal tax situation, paying that tax early during lifetime moves the value of that tax out of their taxable estate. They effectively reduce their taxable estate while still keeping the money in a good tax advantaged account, the Roth, which allows people to continue to earn tax-free and tax-free forever. The other thing it does, if they are also a family that has significant resources, so they are expecting to pass much or all of these funds on to their heirs, the Roth account, if you can get money into the Roth account is not subject to required minimum distributions. So you can stretch those funds and let them continue to grow tax-free longer than you can on a traditional IRA or a 401k plan.
Steve, this one is for you. What account types best allow a person to draw on them penalty-free?
Well, certainly, Patrick, after-tax investment portfolios, your traditional investment portfolio does not bear any kind of penalty other than, you know, we're talking penalties, not taxes. There's always, almost always taxes on decisions that you make to withdraw money from your investments. But an after-tax investment portfolio does not have any penalties for taking money out. Similarly, savings accounts, your traditional savings accounts, unless you're in a CD that has, where you've committed to keeping your money invested with a bank or other account, they might have penalties. It's not an IRS penalty. Roth IRAs, as I mentioned before, can be withdrawn up to the principal amount invested, the original investment, what might be called your basis in the Roth IRA. That can be withdrawn at any time, at any age. You can't take it out and then put it back in other than under 60-day rollover rules. But if you need to take it out, you can take it out without incurring a penalty or even an income tax. 529 plans for education can be used and have no penalties involved, so long as they're used for eligible expenses. Traditional IRAs can actually be taken out penalty-free if they meet, I think there's 9 exceptions for use of those funds, including higher education costs or first-time homebuyer purchases up to a $10,000 withdrawal. You can take those out. Those would be subject to income tax, but not penalties. And finally, if you happen to be one who has inherited an IRA, you can take money out of the inherited IRA without a penalty.
Excellent. Sophia, this last one is for you. For people who are early in the wealth accumulation phase, what steps should they be taking in preparation for their future estate and wealth management needs?
Well, Pat, I think we've sensed a theme here, and the answer to that is first, begin to take steps early, right? And the first step is to begin to identify who your professional team is going to be. It sometimes takes time to encounter the various professionals that you feel comfortable with, that you feel understands you and your family and your goals, and that you are going to entrust with advising you on, the wealth management, wealth accumulation, estate your estate's plan and legacy planning. And so the sooner you do that, the, you know, the better. And then also I would say, it's better to receive a client that has decades of opportunity ahead of them, where there's so much opportunity to do a lot of good, to help maximize opportunities that, you know, as, you know, as a, as an individual or as a family, you don't really recognize as opportunities because, you know, why would you, you know, the, Steve mentioned the first time you're buying a house, you know, for, if you inherit an IRA, when a family member passes away, those are all opportunities that we can help to plan for. And I've had clients who have come to me and said, well, I have a ton of student debt. I'm not ready to begin working with a financial planner, a CPA, or an estate planner. I don't have an estate. And what I would say to that is not true. Everybody has an estate. If you have a dollar, you have an estate. And you would be so surprised at the what type of planning and advice that you might receive, just even if you have aspirations of accumulating wealth. And so it's always better to just to meet people and educate early on so that you can really be a part of all of the exciting things. There's so much going on right now in all of these areas, and a lot is, you know, a lot's changing. There's a lot of opportunity. It's very exciting. And I think if you're thinking, am I ready to begin wealth accumulation? I think the answer is yes.
Excellent. Thank you all so much. We've been through a lot of questions here. A big thanks to the panel here for their insight. It really is key in helping answer our clients' questions and just help them understand what is available to them going forward, right? So important. Thank you all for listening. As always, if you do have questions, please call us at 651-251-1000. If you'd like to hear or see more of our research and insight, visit stonebridgecap.com/news. And again, thank you to our panelists and those listening out there. Have a great day.